Chapter 21.
Not precisely who I would have expected to bring such thing to the council, Obi-Wan is saying when Rex pushes the door of his office open. Shaak is usually quite happy to stick to tradition. Rex pauses in the entrance, not entirely sure he should intrude. Before he can make a sound, though, Depa sighs and says, Shaak knows better than most of us the cost of a Jedi's life. I don't think either of her Padawans made it even a year into their knighthood before they were killed. It sounds like there was a council meeting. Rex hadn't realized there was one coming, and generally they're scheduled at friendlier times. It's still hours before the first shift right now, and Rex frowns, wondering if something's happening. Clearing his throat, he belatedly wraps a fist against the doorframe and offers, Sorry to interrupt, General Kenobi, General Bilaba. At the desk, Obi-Wan blinks, lifting his head. He looks tired, and so does Depa. Her hair is out of its normal braids and falling around her shoulders, but there's a softness to Obi-Wan like this, an easiness that Rex almost never sees. His hair is mussed, his tunic's a little crooked in the way that speaks of haste rather than being caught in a battle, and his eyes are heavy-lidded, his smile weary but warm. Rex carefully doesn't think anything at all, because if he lets himself think, he'll think of everything. You're not an interruption, Captain. Don't worry, Obi-Wan says, and nudges a chair back in invitation. You managed to miss the council meeting in all its glory. Good timing. Rex had meant to drop off some forms for Obi-Wan to sign, and then head back to Pawn's quarters to get some rest. But even though he knows Obi-Wan would accept that excuse immediately, he finds himself sinking down in the free chair. Cautiously, he looks from Obi-Wan to Depa, who's perched on the edge of the desk like a sleepy cat. Did something happen, sirs? He asks warily. There's a pause as Depa glances at Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan glances back. For a long moment, they just share a speaking look. Then Depa sighs and tucks her hair back behind her ears. Well, she says wryly, it's hardly going to be a secret now that Shaak's gotten her way. Obi-Wan's crooked smile is all agreement. It was an emergency council meeting, he tells Rex. Master Shaak Ti on Kamino sent out files earlier, and then Master Luminara Unduli took it upon herself to make sure we all read them immediately. For good reason, Depa says, and reaches right over Obi-Wan to the comm terminal in front of Rex. Obi-Wan makes a sound of amused offense, and Depa flicks him in the forehead as she leans back. Rex refuses to feel any sort of envy over her closeness to Obi-Wan, and determinedly fixes his eyes on the holos that rise in a shimmer of blue. Then, realizing what they are, he blinks, entirely startled. Cadet medical files? He asks, frowning, and flips through them, trying to find what's so urgent that two Jedi Masters would call the rest of the council to an immediate meeting. Silently, Obi-Wan reaches over and touches two different files, the images rising to replace the string of numbers and test results. Brain scans, and Rex isn't any sort of medic, but the big black patches in the middle of normal brain tissue are kind of hard to miss. Chips, Obi-Wan says quietly. In every member of the squad Shaak had tested, they're not a known part of the cloning process, and one of the original ARC troopers from the first batch of clones had no trace of such a chip. Shaak thinks they're dangerous. She and Egan are going to investigate further. And I believe Master Luminara and Master Adi Gallia are both going to have their men checked as soon as possible. Nausea turns through Rex's stomach, and he grips the edge of the desk. Brain chips, he says, disbelieving. Someone chipped us? Like those explosive rounds they put in slaves? We don't know yet, Obi-Wan says, and reaches out, resting a hand over Rex's on the desk. But Rex, I promise you we are going to find out. If it's dangerous for you and your brothers, we'll find a way to deactivate or remove them. I swear. Rex resists the urge to press a hand against the same spot on his skull, to feel desperately for the outline of something that won't have left a mark outside. Feels sick and desperate, and has to close his eyes for a long moment to breathe through his nose, because he's got something in his head that could be used for anything. Rex, Obi-Wan says softly, and curls a hand over the back of his neck, sinking to his knees beside Rex's chair. Obi-Wan pulls him in, and Rex gladly rests their foreheads together, breathing in Obi-Wan's warmth instead of cold, recycled air. It's a gesture another clone would offer, and he's desperately grateful for the grounding touch. We will fix this. You have my word as a Jedi. Whatever has been done to you, we won't let it stand. Rex's breath is almost a laugh, and he opens his eyes. I know, Obi-Wan, but someone tried, and you can't fix that. From this close, Obi-Wan's eyes are sea green and sky blue, and Rex can't think of anything else at all. No, he agrees wearily. We can't, but we can do our best going forward. Shock and Egan are already planning to access the Kaminoans' hidden files, so we should know soon how best to proceed. Rex nods, just this once, lets himself think about the brush of Obi-Wan's hair against his forehead, the scratch of his beard against his cheek, breathes, and eases back the panic, and shores up his determination enough to pull back and say, You talked about that over calm? Of course not, Depa says, amused. And when Rex glances over, she's watching them both closely, a thoughtful look on her face. Rex meets her eyes, and she smiles and says, We talked around it, and then addressed less secretive matters. There was another reason Shock called the meeting, beyond the chips. She found a Force-sensitive clone on Kamino, in training, and wanted to take him as her Padawan. Rex blinks, replays that sentence in his head, and then looks at Obi-Wan incredulously. A clone? One cadet top, Obi-Wan confirms, smiling. He was almost done with his training, but Shock made a connection with him, and had enough suspicion to have his midichlorian count assessed. He's firmly Force-sensitive, and I believe they were discussing Padawan hairstyles when we ended the meeting. Rex runs through that statement, pauses, and asks, Done? With training? You mean he's not a kid? No, Depa says. An adult clone. But given the circumstances surrounding the creation of the clone army, Master Yoda agreed to his training. She cocks her head slightly and says, I think we should make testing for midichlorian levels part of basic physicals, now that we know it's a possibility. Obi-Wan eyes her curiously. You think one of your men... Depa tips one shoulder in a shrug. Commander Gray is very resistant to Force mind tricks, she says. Caleb was practicing with him. And Gray could throw off practically all of it. Caleb was entirely discouraged until Soot volunteered to take Gray's place, and he didn't have a problem. Perhaps it's nothing, but in light of Shock's findings? Perhaps it's something, Obi-Wan agrees. Clones. Clones as Jedi. Rex pauses, trying to let that idea sink in, and shakes his head. There can't be that many, he says. We would know it's... But he can't find the justification, and Obi-Wan just looks tired. Force sensitivity can manifest as good instincts, he says. Tup was having nightmares of the future. I've seen it as heightened empathy, or awareness of what people will say before they say it, increased agility, or a sensitivity to danger. It's not always an obvious thing. He glances at Depa again and offers, There likely won't be a vast number. Force sensitives are rare, even among large populations, and there's no saying if all those we find will want full training. Tup did, but we're certainly not going to require that any clone with a talent for the Force immediately enter the temple. Depa hums. There are very few Jedi, she says, leaning forward to prop her elbows on her knees, her chin on her laced hands. And fewer masters among us who can take on students. I would hope that we find all potentially Force-sensitive clones, but I do wonder how many there will be. Even those who don't wish to be Jedi will need to at least know how to control their abilities, and that requires teaching. Rex looks down at his own hands, curled in his lap, thinks about clones as Jedi, serving the Republic as generals, and wonders what that would mean for their standing. Still property? Still weapons grown in a lab? Jedi answer to the Senate, but they're a separate entity, a religious order that keeps its own customs. There's a level of freedom in that, something the clones don't have right now. Just for an instant, Rex wishes desperately, achingly that he was one of the Force-sensitive clones, that he could have that life and not worry about a future of being decommissioned when the war is over, if he even makes it that long. Then, with a grimace, he releases a breath and lets the feeling fade. He doesn't want to be a Jedi. They're good people, and kind and selfless, and Rex admires that, but he doesn't want to be the same way. He's seen how Anakin and Ahsoka react to battlefields in the aftermath, to places where killings have occurred, has seen Obi-Wan try to block out negative emotions or the pain of people around him, or suffer nightmares about a dark future. Being tapped into a power like that would be hell, and Rex doesn't want it even a little. I think most brothers will take you up on it, he says, being a Jedi, but some won't. Obi-Wan sighs, running a hand through his hair as he rises. Gently, he squeezes Rex's shoulder, then drops his hand, though he doesn't step away. Including the test and physicals is a good idea, he tells Depa. I'll have Shank add it to the protocols for the rest of the medics, and see about updating the systems for the Gar as a whole. Depa chuckles. Have I mentioned how concerning it is that you have a medic named Shank, Obi-Wan? He is lovely, thank you very much, Obi-Wan retorts, and I'm sure anyone he stabbed was rather desperately asking for it. Rex, who has heard Obi-Wan call his medic everything from an inconveniently observant bloodhound to a fine specimen of the bloodthirsty medic species to unnervingly fond of stabbing sentients with needles, raises an incredulous brow at him. Obi-Wan pointedly ignores him. Before Rex can set the record straight, however, Obi-Wan's calm goes off. There's a moment of silence as he and Depa both eye it warily, and then Obi-Wan sighs. Odds that it's Luminara trying to catch me in bed again? He asks, forcing his voice towards good humor. Depa laughs at him. Odds that Commander Gree will poison your tea for flirting with her while naked, she counters. I don't flirt, Obi-Wan says, offended, and certainly not with Luminara. The sheer ridiculousness of that statement makes Rex gape. You flirt with Dooku, he says incredulously. Obi-Wan, you flirt with me. Obi-Wan's eyes widen, and unless Rex is very much mistaken, he flushes faintly. That, he says with dignity, is an entirely different matter. Oh, Depa asks, smirking. Is it Obi-Wan? With a huff, Obi-Wan slumps back into his chair, folding his arms over his chest. You don't get to say that, he retorts. You flirt with Senator Amidala every time she's within 20 paces of you. Depa rolls her eyes. Rex has seen Mace Windu make the exact same expression, and it's kind of hilarious how well she matches it. Answer your comm, Obi-Wan. Like an offended cat, Obi-Wan hits the button. Kenobi, he says, giving Deppa a narrow look. Deppa just smirks at him, perfectly pleased with herself. General, Pond says over the channel, you're needed on the bridge immediately. We found something. That doesn't sound good at all. And what might this something be, Commander? Obi-Wan asks, though he's already on his feet and heading for the door, Deppa right behind him. Rex follows quickly, bringing up the rear, and manages to catch it when Pond says, Commander Gray noticed an anomaly in one of General Bilaba's scans during her approach, and we processed it. A Republic ship crossed into the nebula outside of the range of our scanners, but its transponder was scrambled. Deppa frowns, and Obi-Wan glances back at Rex, something grimly resigned crossing his face. No chance of identifying it, Commander. No, sir. Pond sounds slightly frustrated. We can tell it's from the Republic, but nothing else. Thank you, Commander. We're on our way. Obi-Wan closes the channel, then glances over at Rex again. Suddenly, this whole invasion feels rather too much like a distraction, Captain. Just a little, Rex says grimly. Grievous trying to take Ord Radama was a threat, but being a way to draw their attention makes far more sense. The Ordnance bunkers have long-range scanners, don't they? They were disabled when the Seps captured them, so he must have had them destroyed, Obi-Wan confirms, the line of his mouth thin. And with all of our attention fixed on locating Grievous, and then Anakin and Master Windu, repairing them wasn't the priority. If Deppa hadn't arrived unexpectedly, if her ship hadn't picked up something, if Gray hadn't noticed, they wouldn't know at all, Rex thinks. It's sheer luck they caught it. They're in need of some good luck at this point. But somehow Rex suspects there's a whole host of bad news lurking just beneath the surface. I can't believe this planet has zombies, Fives says, scandalized by the ridiculousness of it. He twists, glancing over the low wall they're hunkered down behind, then quickly ducks back under cover and says, three of them, 40 meters away, but heading east. General Skywalker grimaces, shoving Kix's helmet down a little further behind the low spot on the wall. Where's Master Obi-Wan and his ability to redirect Sith lightning when you need him? He mutters, eyeing the distance between them and the nearest cover. Kix, anything? Kix shakes his head. However Commander Cody connected to us before, it's not working now. Maybe they're just out of range. Maybe they got eaten, Fives mutters, though he really hopes not. General Windu's nice. Cody's a jerk, but that's probably to be expected of someone in the 212th. At least that's what Captain Rex always says. No. General Skywalker says firmly, I can feel Master Windu out there, even if I can't reach him. He frowns, looking deeply concerned for a moment, and then says, I'd be worried about the planet eating him, actually. Fives looks at Kix, confused, to find Kix looking back with equal bewilderment. The planet, sir? He asks. It's dark. Skywalker says, like that explains everything. And Master Windu might walk the line between light and dark, but if he's here too long, I think it might try to take him, no matter how much he fights it. What about you, sir? Kix asks, concerned. Is it only certain Jedi, or can it take you too? Skywalker hesitates, looking away. His right hand curls into a fist, and he breathes out. There's a lot of darkness, he says, like it's a confession. But It's like it's easier to see the light here, too. There's so little of it. It's like a reminder. That's not any less confusing. And Fives pulls a face behind the safety of his helmet, wishing Echo was here, wishing Cut-Up was here, and not dead uselessly on a rocky Rishi moon. Cut-Up always knew what to do, even if he was a bastard about telling them all sometimes. I love that you think that makes sense, Fives mutters, remembers belatedly to tack, sir, onto the end of it, and suffers through, kicks his thump on the arm with a roll of his eyes. Skywalker makes an offended face at him, which is hilarious because it looks a lot like one of Heavy's. Just because you're Master Windu's favorite doesn't mean you have to pick on me too, he complains. Fives blinks, startled. His favorite? He asks. Wait, do you mean that? Skywalker snorts, and there's a smirk spreading over his face. You're the one wearing his robe, Fives. You tell me. Fives blinks, looking down at the practical brown cloth. My undersuit's ripped, he protests. He was just being nice. If my clothes got ripped, he'd make me weave new ones out of swamp grass, Skywalker tells him. He just gave you his own clothes like it was nothing. The 91st shared rations with civilians on Ryloth, Kix observes, faintly amused. And everyone in Lightning Squadron would die for him, sir. And I think we can safely say that no matter how much of a jerk Commander Cody can be, he wouldn't have married General Windu if he was cruel. Jedi aren't cruel, Skywalker says, like it's a knee-jerk response. Then pauses, adds more slowly. He's not cruel, just cold. Really? Fives asks, surprised. He thinks back, trying to see it, but he slows down when we're walking together. Skywalker blinks at him, like he doesn't get it. He's taller, Kix says, waving a hand at Fives. Taller than us, at least. So he's got longer strides, and we're wearing pretty heavy armor, while he's just in Jedi robes. General Windu slows down so that we don't have to hurry to keep up, and if we're going up something steep, he always helps me up first, because the medkit's heavy. And he got us over the wall when we were going to help Ghost Company, Fives points out. We could have climbed it, but it would have made us targets for any droids behind us, so he lifted us. He got between me and the Magna guards, too. Frowning faintly, Skywalker looks between them. I guess I didn't notice, he says slowly. Kix just shrugs. The 91st has never complained either. Some Jedi usually try to focus on the enemy, but General Windu protects his men even when it slows him down. Clones talk about that kind of thing. A pause, and he gives Fives a sideways smirk through his helmet. He hasn't throttled Fives for bombarding him with questions yet either. Hey! Fives protests, offended. Oh. Skywalker ignores Fives, sinking back against the wall. This time his frown is more thoughtful than anything. He talks to Padawans like that, too. And I guess to everyone. Fives eyes him, debates opening his mouth. After a second, though, he can't resist. And he asks, you don't like him very much, do you, sir? Fives? Kix says, exasperated. Skywalker doesn't answer immediately, though. There's a long, long pause. And then he says, I don't know. Fives wants to ask why, but before he can, Skywalker twists to his feet. They're gone, he says. Come on, the Citadel's up ahead. The Citadel is way too close, in Fives' opinion. The whole thing is creepy. Still, he gets to his feet, offers Kix a hand up, and picks up his blaster. Not that it's been doing him any good against the zombies. Only lightsabers seem to manage that,
And even then, only when Skywalker can manage to dodge the evil Force lightning long enough to hit them. Fives hates being helpless. It feels like bolting out of Rishi Station and seeing it explode behind him with Heavy still inside. Feels like droid bait in the entrance, killed trying to hold off the droids as they took the base. Like cut up, caught by a Rishi eel for no carking reason, except he was standing in the wrong place at the wrong time. Easy, Kix says quietly, and claps him lightly on the shoulder as he steps past. The general will get us there in one piece. He doesn't leave troopers behind. Fives has heard that from a lot of brothers. He kind of prefers it when there are two Jedi around, though. Especially when one of the two is General Windu. He's the one who managed to beat Jango Fett in a fair fight, after all. When Fives heard they were going to be aboard the Endurance, he'd hoped desperately to just get a glimpse of him. And now they're all on the same mission. Well, if this counts as a mission. Still, Fives is fairly certain that there's nothing on this planet that could take out General Windu and Commander Cody. Nothing would dare. Even the flowers here want to kill us, Cody hisses, sounding disgusted. Where's an aerial bombardment when you need it? Mace very carefully doesn't let his amusement show, helping Cody pull the last of the long, poison thorns from his armor. I told you, he says calmly. There are no upsides to Sith planets. Believe me, I'm convinced, Cody mutters, wrenching one more thorn out and then straightening. I could even do with less convincing, honestly. Somehow, Mace doubts they're likely to encounter fewer obstacles the closer they get to the Citadel. Well, he says, you certainly convinced the flowers. Cody gives him the look that statement probably deserves. They're 4 feet tall and spit poison thorns. Somehow, Mace says dryly, I doubt a cursed Sith warblade was meant to double as a hedge trimmer, but I'm glad it worked. With a grimace, Cody wraps his knuckles against the hilt of the sword, safely strapped at his waist now instead of across his back. It figures whoever made a cursed sword wouldn't bother to make a practical sheath, he says, disdainful. Mace is honestly far fonder of Cody than he had expected to be before their marriage. It takes actual effort not to let his humor show, and he looks away, then says, I think we can leave the gardens behind us. Please? Cody casts another glance back, to where the remaining handful of dart flowers have turned their heads to look at them, and narrows his eyes. Then, deliberately, he turns his back on them, offering Mace a hand. Mace takes it, letting Cody pull him to his feet, and tries not to grimace at the pull of two stiff muscles. Obi-Wan and Anakin's encounter with Dooku's Force lightning prompted him to look up old Jedi techniques for countering it. But apparently he needs more practice to go along with the theory. Not that practice is likely to be in short supply with all the zombies between them and the Citadel. All right? Cody asks, frowning faintly as he watches Mace move. We didn't exactly sit around that temple for long. If they had, Mace has no doubt another war worm would have crawled out of somewhere. That seems to be how the trek is going. Stiff, Mace allows, because he knows better than to hide something that could be a hindrance in a fight. The mud baths aren't nearly as relaxing as they could be. Cody snorts. If you keep pretending not to have a sense of humor, General Skywalker is going to have a heart attack the next time you make a joke, he warns. As if that isn't the whole point, Mace doesn't say. Like that, is it? Cody says wryly, reading the response on Mace's face. Then you get to be the one to explain it to General Kenobi. If you're expecting Obi-Wan to take Anakin's side,
I think you've underestimated the Padawan Master Bond, Mace says, and overestimated how easy we intend to make life for our students. Fives is in for a hell of a time, Cody says, amused, and pauses at the top of a steeply inclined street. It's still too dark to make out much, but Mace thinks he catches movement in the shadows, all up and down the wide avenue, as lightning flickers overhead. I believe Fives will do just fine, Mace says, though he can't quite pull his eyes away from the Citadel. The base of it is wide, dark, and getting in is only going to be the first of their problems. Beside him, Cody is equally silent for a long, long moment, and then he sighs. Our marriage won't end up amounting to much if we spend all of it on a Sith planet way outside Republic space. Mace weighs his words for a long moment before he says, I never meant it to be something you would regret, Cody. Cody casts him a sideways glance, unreadable. I don't, he says, turning his eyes ahead of them again. Not the marriage part. It's just frustrated getting stranded here. If I'm gonna go out. He doesn't finish, but Mace knows what follows, even without having to touch Cody's mind. If I'm going to go out, I'd rather do it with the whole galaxy knowing I'm free. An understandable sentiment in the light of everything. Drolmond Kos won't hold us forever, he says, unwavering, and believes it. It's only practical. They'll keep trying until they find a way off. We already have a ship. Thankfully, that makes Cody snort. Let's just hope General Skywalker doesn't crash this one, he says, and starts down the hill, moving carefully. It's completely dark beyond the flickers of lightning, but stealing a torch from the temple seemed too much like throwing up a beacon declaring their location, and by unspoken agreement they'd left it behind. Mace considers the silence between them as they move, half of his attention on their surroundings, but half of it on Cody. Arranges things he could say, then rejects them, one after another, and finally settles on. I'm aware that our marriage feels strangling, but I would hardly hold you to vows we didn't take. If you wish to find someone, I won't object. Cody doesn't look at him, keeps his gaze fixed forward. Won't that look bad when we're arguing for a love match? Love doesn't have anything to do with sex, Mace says. The breath Cody lets out is exasperation, barely covering embarrassment. No, it doesn't, but too many implications. Mace inclines his head, accepting that. Cody thinks like a soldier, and it isn't a surprise. Maybe at some point he'll change his mind, and Mace will accept whatever decision he makes then. You know, it's the same for you, Cody says suddenly, and a flicker of lightning washes across the sky, enough for Mace to catch the look Cody turns on him. If there's someone, I know you and General Kuhn are, close. Mace says, eternally long-suffering in the face of such persistent belief in an affair that doesn't exist. Plo very much enjoys winding up the rest of the council with rumors. Unfounded rumors. There's a startled pause, and then Cody laughs. He's gossip-mongering to annoy the council that he's on? Plo Koon, Mace says dryly, has never met a mischief he did not embrace wholeheartedly. He feels the skepticism that rises more than he sees it, and snorts. Ask Wolf. I will, Cody says, and then, if a zombie wanted to try and eat us right now, I wouldn't object. Not a comfortable conversation. Mace is glad to know the feeling isn't just on his part. He snorts, tilting his head to judge the next street for obstacles, and catches a glimpse of more dart flowers waiting. Instead of trying to mow them down, he slips through the next gap in the crumbled buildings,
and leads Cody over to the next street, this one curving past the edge of the ravine in places. Mace doesn't even think to mind the drop, but Cody gives it a wary look and deliberately walks on Mace's other side. If some kind of monster comes out of that pit, I'm going to go back and wait by the crash site, he says, resigned.
No, you won't, Mace says, raising a brow at him. You're the one carrying the impossibly sharp Sith sword.
Cody sighs. No, I won't, he allows. Anything? Mace's senses have been perfectly unreliable, and he can't quite shake the memory of Anakin's instincts leading him in the opposite direction of Mace's every time they tried to make a decision. Can't tell if that makes him distrust Anakin or himself more, but dislikes it either way. Still, he reaches out, trying to feel anything, stops, perfectly still as a figure coalesces out of thin air, darkness thick around it, with one bright soul caught in the coil of it. Mace, Qui-Gon says, ragged, looks ragged, still solid but worn as he staggers a step closer. His eyes are wide, steel blue the way they always were, but he's hurt. It's easy to see. Mace knows the dangers of letting sentiment blind him, but his heart still lurches in his chest, and he wants nothing more than to take a step forward, to catch Qui-Gon with the instinct of a lifetime. They have the boy, Qui-Gon says, and Mace stills, breath catching. Qui-Gon looks up at him, right through Cody, and there's a familiar sort of fear on his face. Mace, he insists, desperate. The same tone Mace once heard when Obi-Wan was in trouble. They caught Anakin. You must save him. Please.